Good evening, everyone. This is host Terry Lynn Coop, and tonight I am pleased as all get out to be serving up award-winning author Melanie Hoinga, who is also known around the web as Melanie Who or Melanie Swifty, on the Blue Plate Special. She started writing as a how awesome you are. She started writing as a teenager and finds that's still where she relates the best. She's lived in D.C., Chicago, and Mexico, but finally went on home to Michigan. And when she's not at her day job as communications director at a nonprofit, she is wrangling the one and only Super Owen, who we'll hear more about, and playing every sport imaginable with her husband. We'll talk a little bit later about where we can find her around the web, too. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Let's just start right in. Why don't you tell us about your new book and the new series that it's a part of?
Great. So The Trail Rules is the second book in what I'm calling the Rules series. The first one was called The Slope Rules. And it is part of a series, but it does stand alone. So it's about a girl named Mike. So her name is Michaela, but she goes by Mike. And she is learning to mountain bike, and picking up from the first book, she thinks she's got her whole life sorted out. She's got the boyfriend she's wanted. She's a junior. Things are looking good. And then, as so often happens in relationships, she just suddenly doesn't like her boyfriend as much anymore. And now her parents are coming down on her to figure out what she wants to do for the rest of her life. And she's, you know, school's really not as important to her. Really, she just decides she loves mountain biking. She started doing that with her boyfriend, but then meets a group of friends who are better than her, but really just like her for who she is and kind of encourage her to go after what makes her happy. And so it's really about just kind of the tagline I've been using is there's more to life than following. What did I say? There's more than life than being a follower, and then you have to learn how to find your own trail, basically. And, you know, with The Slope Rules, the first book in the series, it's about a skier, and she moves to a new town and has to kind of learn how to make her way without her friends back home. And I've skied my whole life. Like, so writing about her was really cool. I did research to make sure I had terminology right, but for the most part, I knew what I was doing. And while I've skied, she does tricks and flips and stuff that I can't do, but I still understood it. So now we get Mike, who's a mountain biker. And the reason I decided to do mountain biking is their books are set in Colorado. And a lot of people who ski and snowboard, they mountain bike in the off season. So when there's no snow, that's what they do. And actually use a lot of the trails and stuff like that too. So I decided to make her a mountain biker. The only problem is, like, the most aggressive I am on my bike is, like, I'll hop a curb into traffic or cut across my front yard, and I'm like, yes, I'm hardcore. So I had to do a little more research on that one. And all last summer I kept joking that I was probably going to break my face attempting to mountain bike in some trails, and we ended up not doing it. I really wanted to, and I'm disappointed I didn't. But I have a good friend who's local and also a writer who is an avid mountain biker. So I picked her brain, and she told me kind of like just terminology, but like what happens when you meet people on a trail, because they make friends out there, but also like at one point they encounter a guy who wiped out and he's got a cut on his head and a flat tire. And what happens when that happens? So the best reaction I've gotten was from my grandma, who read the book and said, "Mel, I didn't know you raced mountain bikes. That's so awesome." And I'm like, "No, grandma, I don't."
Well, see, I figured you and Jeremy were totally out there on the trail in your little spandex shorts, showing everybody
how it was done. Shorts is accurate, yes.
Now, to make sure, are the characters in each completely unique to that book, or do they flow together in any way?
They do flow together. So in the first one, Callie is the main character, and Mike is one of the girls she meets at her new school. And Mike is part of what I call the Snow Bunnies. It's one of the mean girl clique, but she ends up breaking, not this is kind of a spoiler, but whatever, but she ends up breaking away from that group and becomes friends with Callie. And so, you know, Callie's boyfriend is Blake, and there's other characters. So in book two, it's Mike's story, but it's still chronological. Callie's still her friend. They're in the same school. So you still see the same characters, but then she also makes new friends. And so it's her world, it's her home, you know, her sister, that kind of thing. And so it was fun to kind of write the characters from a different perspective, because Callie is the most like me of any character I've written. So then to write her how somebody views her externally as opposed to how she thinks was a lot of fun. And with Mike, she's way more internal or more of an introvert than I am. Mm-hmm. And so it did take some work to kind of show how she's trying to be a better person and how she's trying to change from how she used to be when she's not overt about it. Like, my actions are pretty obvious, but for her, it's more internal and it's more inside her head. And how do you keep that interesting?
Now,
then,
what
there
is
actually
gonna,
a book three coming too. So it'll be another
character.
That was
going to be my next question. What, so is book three going to pick up, then be the story of a character that we met in book one or in book two?
Both. So it will be Brianna's story, who is the mean girl. And she's absolutely awful in the first book, did some horrible things both in her past. She continues to be awful. And then in book two, Mike is no longer friends with her. They used to be best friends. And there's something going on with her. You don't really know what it is. And I'm kind of leading up to what happens in book three, where basically everything she's done in the past comes back to bite her in the butt. And
now
I chose, go ahead.
No, what is the sport going to be in book three?
So it's snowboarding, and it's called the Edge Rules, because, you know, with snowboarding, the edge has a lot to do with what you're doing. I am also not a snowboarder. I did it once about 20 years ago and did decently, but that was when I learned you literally can knock the snot out of yourself when you fall hard enough. So I don't plan on revisiting that, but luckily enough, I have friends who snowboard, so she's going to be a beginner as well. And that was kind of my thought with the mountain biking too. If I made her a beginner and have her learning, you know, I feel like I'm being more authentic. I mean, I'm sure I could write her being a professional or being really good, but the friends she meets are really good. And so then I felt a little more, you know, true to what I know by putting it in these other people rather than having her use the terminology. So with the third book, Brianna is like really stuck up, totally loves skiing, looks down her nose at anybody who does anything else, and is convinced by a cute boy. And I mean, there's more to it than just that, but to try snowboarding, and ends up loving it. So there's a lot of growth in her story. She's so awful that I wanted to write to show people, A, you know, if you know somebody who's a total bully or just, you know, just unbelievably horrible, there's probably something going on in their life that made them that way or that is making them that way.
True.
Like, you know, and then that's usually, there's something going on. That doesn't mean you have to be their best friend. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of the political stuff going on right now, but there's usually something underlying going on. But also, if you happen to be that person, you know, you don't have to stay that way. Like, you can change
things.
And you can turn around and be a better person, and the world won't end. But it starts off with book three, starts with her in a jail cell. So I figured, you know, let's make it interesting.
So why did you decide to go with this sports motif? Because we're gonna talk about your first series in a minute.
Yeah.
But the second series is a complete 180 from your first series.
Yeah.
And what
it
made
is.
You decide to go with this sports motif?
So it was a couple things. Like the Flicker Effect, the first series, they're not dark, but they're definitely heavier topics. And a little, you know, there's just more, I don't want to say more to them. They're just heavier topics. And so I spent, you know, I published the first one in 2012. And when you write a series, especially when they're all based on the same character, you don't promote book two or three or four, you promote book one. So I was promoting book one for 5 years. I'm like, I'm getting really tired of this book. Like, I still love it, but I wanted to just deal with something new. And about 4 years ago, well, it was 4 years ago during the Winter Olympics in 2014, you know, I'm watching the skiers and everything. And again, I've skied since I was five and I've always loved it. And I love watching slope style, which is when they're doing the flips and stuff. And we happened to have about 120 inches of snow that winter. So, you know, I'm burrowed in my house and watching skiing on TV. And I'm thinking, this would be awesome to write about a girl who skis and just, you know, kind of let my mind wander from there. And my pitch for the Soul Rules is, I say, it's Grease meets Mean Girls with downhill skiing. Because I took the idea from Grease, where it's two kids who meet on vacation and fall in love, as teenagers do, and through a twist of fate end up in the same school together. But thought in like today's day and age, how would that happen? And basically he lies. So the story, like the love story, is about them kind of re-navigating that, but it's also about her being in this new school where she can't be on a ski team and skiing is her life. And so, you know, what does that mean for her? But the Grease side of it was like, I mean, you have an idea for a sports book. Well, that's not a story. Like, that's an idea. And I've talked to some school groups recently about that. Like, you have an idea. Well, that's a premise. Like, that doesn't mean that's the story. So, okay, I have a female skier. Well, now what? So I took the idea from Grease, where we've got the Pink Ladies and the T-Birds, and I have the Snow Bunnies, the Ski Bums, and the Moguls. And, you know, just kind of the little cliquish thing and all the silliness. And I've kind of had fun with Brianna because since she names everybody, she does it a little bit more in that book. But, no, I've just always played sports. I've played pretty much every sport under the sun. And I was rewriting a book, a previous novel that I've never published, and added in some sports. I'm like, this is really fun. I really like this. And so then I ended up getting into with slope rules, and it just apparently I'm meant to write sports romance novels. I don't know. My future ideas are not sports related, but I just really enjoyed it, and that kind of the active side of it, and adding a little. It's a interesting way to add excitement and like a faster pace than just, you know, them walking along down a sidewalk. So.
Do you anticipate going on beyond book three in the sports series, or?
I've had an idea for a potential book four. So I've written book three, and that'll come out in October. And I had an idea to revisit Callie. I don't know if I'm going to do it or not, because I have other ideas. I have two competing ideas that I can't decide which one to write next, and they're completely unrelated, totally different things.
That has never, of course, ever happened to me. Never, never.
No, never.
No, never.
No.
So let's go back. Let's go back to where it started with your first trilogy.
Yeah.
And
because
it also, like you said, it has some heavier themes to it.
Right.
But it also has a little paranormal bent, too.
Right. And I think that was my big struggle. Like when I go to events, I sell those books like crazy. But apparently my pitch in person is better than what's going on online. I don't know. And so I've modified my website, actually, to just the way that I say it in person. Just I'm like, you know, that's a better way. It's basically the idea. It's called Flicker is the first book. And it's about a girl who uses sunlight to go back to yesterday. Okay. So it's time travel, but it's contemporary. And I don't consider it science fiction because I don't read science fiction. And I've met people and they're like, oh, I love time travel. I'm like, okay, well, hold on. I want to make sure you understand, like, this is more about like what she does when she goes back. She can only go back 18 hours. She can't just go willy-nilly wherever she was. And so there's a lot of like the rules to time travel that I completely disregard, or I've just made it my own. And, you know, I don't want them to be upset because that's not what they wanted. So the premise for Flicker is, you know, it starts off where she uses her ability to fix silly things. So like if she gets in a fight with her friends or she fails a test, she can go back and change it. And in Flicker, there's a mystery involved where girls in her town start disappearing. And she realizes she could help them, but she'd have to tell someone her secret. And so then the other two books follow along after that. So, you know, I've heard magical realism kind of for that. It's just basically, you know, it's contemporary, but she's got this little quirk in her head that makes her different. And I got the idea. So, you know, if you're driving in a car, I mean, you know, if you've read the books, you're familiar with this. But
yes,
if you're driving in a car and the sunlight comes through the trees and it has like a flickering effect. And as I tell people, that really messes with my head. Like I have to shield my eyes or I feel like I'm going to convulse. And I was driving to see my grandma one day or whatever. And it just popped into my head. I'm like, what if, you know, when that happens, there's a girl who goes back 18 hours. And so that's what I did. And like I said, with the slope rules, that's a premise, but that's not a story. So I still had to come up with, you know, what's the plot after that? But yeah,
well,
there were a lot of
one thing I liked in Flicker too, is she had a consequence for doing that.
Right.
The
she gets really bad migraines.
And I like that because that just keeps it away from something like she's, oh, okay, let's just press the reset button.
Right.
Now, not that she doesn't still just press the reset
right.
button, like you said, you know, she had a fight with her friend because she's a teenager, but
right.
it does, there, you know, there are real world consequences for her
right.
as she goes through that. And that's kind of what sold it for me. That's what made it believable.
Right.
And
well,
made
you know,
it
like most powers there is like most powers there's something like there is some negative, like you can't just have the
yeah.
superpower without there being a risk.
Yeah. It gave her stakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because thing, you know, like in Stephen King and Firestarter, you know, the
right.
father has the little brain bleeds and the headaches after every time that he uses his psychic powers. It's that
right.
that gives it some tension and it gives it some stakes because it's like what's
well,
going to happen?
Yeah, Stranger Things has the same thing, like the show with a little girl. I mean, every time she uses her mind to do things, she, you know, she starts bleeding. So,
so there's Flicker, and then what's the next one?
Fracture is the next one, and then Faded. And so Fracture, I always have a hard time talking about them because they give away a spoiler at the end, but I'm like, well, I guess if you're reading it. Basically, she's, you know, that one deals with bullying a little more heavily, you know, Biz is trying to fit in and she's, you know, had some changes that people are giving her a hard time. And then the one character's younger sister is dealing with the trauma that she's going through. And, you know, it's just a lot heavier. And I just, somebody was just asking me what the hardest scene I ever wrote was. And it was like the one at the end of the book, because, you know, it deals with suicide and it was hard on its own, but you add in time travel and repeating things and it's just like, okay, this is a little challenging. And the third book then is about, I look at them as a series where, you know, the first one is she's learning to deal with her ability. The second one is when, you know, everything hits the fan. And then the third one is where she's kind of coming to terms with how she's going to live with this ability as she comes to think about it for the rest of her life. Now that she knows the consequences and know what can happen long-term. But yeah, everything kind of falls there, and that's about betrayal and family death and, you know, a little bit of a spoiler, her dad dies, and I ended up writing that. Did I write that? I think, like, right when my dad died. So I'm like, why are we timing out like this way? Yeah, so, I mean, but there's some real stuff in there, and some of the real conversations I had with my dad are in there. So, you know, that worked out well, but.
Oh, and I completely understand that. You've definitely had a rough few years.
Yeah.
But the writing shines through. You're coming through. And
yeah.
I was on your sports books. I was going to joke. It's like, you know, you have to write a golf book at some point. Come on.
Well, we keep thinking of the different sports. We do golf a lot, but we play softball, and I'm terrible at softball. So, like, my only skill, I'm surprisingly a really fast sprinter. I don't know why, but usually I'm the fastest girl on the team. So quite often I'll strike out and then I end up running for somebody who actually gets on base. And I'm like, all right, well, that works if I can be a beast somewhere. But
well,
my husband's
see, we've
really
got,
good.
We've got golf.
So
we've
bad.
Got softball.
Yeah.
What would be another good summer sport that you could throw and make a trilogy out of?
We kayak as much as we can. And I thought about doing that instead of mountain biking, actually, because, you know, you can do that too. But we hike and walk the dog and bike and we play soccer, volleyball.
This stuff just writes itself. We're getting the whole series laid out here.
I know. I can just keep meeting new people and they're all new sports.
No, because kind of what that leads into, what's your writing process? How do you, you know, you talked here a little bit about how, you know, the difference between premise and concept and story
right.
and that type of thing. How do you attack a book? Do you do it with the series in mind? Where do you go? Do you outline? Are you a pantser? What are you?
So I'm definitely an outliner, and I've never approached a book thinking it was going to be part of a series. And surprise, I have two series. So basically, I used to have a really hard time with ideas. I have two novels that I wrote prior to publishing Flickr, and I still keep trying to rewrite one of those to see if I can eventually publish it. But I very much need to know how a book ends before I can start writing it. And that doesn't mean I need to know every single detail. Like one of my closest friends doesn't outline at all. She just kind of flies by the seat of her pants. And she's challenged me, like, just sit down and write. Just see what happens. And I did one time to humor her. And 5 years later, I put that scene in the soap rules because I didn't know what to do with it. I'm like, okay, I have this 4-page scene. Now what? And so I take my ideas and I basically, you know, when I first come up with it, it's just like somebody opened a faucet and their ideas are coming out fast and furious. And I write them as fast as I can. And it's messy and it's not intended for anybody else. And then I kind of take that and I've started using like an actual timeline, like what you did in history class or whatever. And I break it into three parts. And I just start plotting out from my notes what are those three main things, like the big things, and then kind of narrowing it down from there. And that helps me see visually, because I'm a very visual person, where my holes are and what I need to figure out. And that doesn't mean I figure it out right away or that I don't change it, but I kind of get a structure of, okay, if I know there's going to be a fight at page 100, well, what's going to happen to lead up to that and who are the people, you know? So it kind of helps me look at it that way. Then I go into, I just use Word. I don't use any fancy programs or anything, but, and I start doing an actual outline, which I consider that more of a guide. And I don't know if you saw my author page post today. I said, I view my outline kind of as a safety net for diving into my imagination because it just keeps me on track. Like, I know I came up with it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of good. I like that. And, but my guide, I have between 1 to 5 sentences per chapter, if that, and sometimes it's, you know, three words. But it's just enough to keep me on track. And then I start writing. And oftentimes when I'm working on my outline, because the ideas are coming, I'll start writing like the first chapter or something like that. But I don't really get into it until I have a pretty concrete idea of where the book is going. And like with the trail rules, she decided midway through the book she didn't like her boyfriend anymore. I was like, oh, okay. So I had to go in and change the whole second half of the outline. Because, I mean, the big things I could keep, but like there were others that changed. And so, you know, I think a lot of people are afraid of outlines because they think that it either stifles their creativity or the spontaneity, and they can't, you know, as we all, as writers know, the characters talk to us, like we're just writing down what they say, and they're like, well, that's going to stifle that. I'm like, no, it doesn't. Like, you still have total flexibility to change it. It just kind of keeps you on track. And that's worked really well for me. And I've also found, like, when it comes time to write a synopsis and things like that, it's really helpful to have a chapter by chapter summary of what happens. You know,
well, if
you
you're going to use bad, if you're going to use bad language, we're just going to have to get off the air. You said the S word.
I know. I'll say, okay, back cover blurb. How's that?
No, and I agree with you. I do something. I do something that's kind of halfway between plotting and pantsing. I kind of take I write to a pretty strict 3-act arc, and I decide, you know, based on what I think the word about what the word count should be, you know, given the genre.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, by the end of act one, we need to have accomplished this, and it should be
right.
at about roughly this word count.
And
if it doesn't,
any attention to word counts.
Yeah, I'm an engineer. What can I say? That's what That's what I have to do. So again, so somewhere halfway in between. How often do you write? Do you try and write every day, or do you
make
time?
I'm in a weird space because I finished writing the Edge Rules at the beginning of January, and knew that. So then I switched gears to start publishing the Trail Rules, and I've been pretty heavy in marketing and promo stuff for that. Like, I had 5 blog posts due today because I have a bunch of blog tours set up, and they're like, oh, by the way, those are all due Friday. I'm like, oh, perfect. So
perfect.
I know. So I've been doing a lot of those. But I write bonus scenes for these books. So if you write for the Slopes, for the Rules series, if you write a review and email me a link, I will send you bonus scenes from the male love interest perspective. So it's a fun little thing. But I actually am going to be in a young adult contemporary romance anthology this summer. So I decided to write a short story about Mike's new friend, Alex, and her boyfriend, Kurt, of how they met. So there's still mountain biking, but these are all like the pro, like the hardcore ones that actually know what they're doing. So her new friend, Mike's new friends in the book, which are Alex, Kurt, Micah, and Topher, they're in the short story. And it's just a little quick thing, but it's how they got together. And I had so much fun with that. I'd never actually written a proper short story before. And it's a nice little tie-in for the other book. I know. So I did do a little bit of writing in February. I'm itching to kind of sit down. After I get through this next week, I'm going to dive into edits for the Edge Rules. And my two competing new ideas, one is a new adult romance based on last summer's Eclipse, and the other one is like a more psychological thrillery type young adult. And I'm leaning towards the Eclipse one. I'm like, it's going to be summer. I should write about that summer.
No,
so.
I like that. And that's it's an interesting, timely topic. And that just kind of leads right into my next question, which is why YA?
Because I'm really immature. Probably not the right answer.
Okay.
No.
No, not at all.
No, it's not. I actually, the first two novels that I wrote were written for an adult audience, but they had both had teenage protagonists, and I didn't even realize it. One of them was a three POV book, but the most intriguing one and the one I found the easiest time writing was the teenager. And so it was actually a fellow author, Amy Nathan, who was like, you know, maybe you should consider writing young adult. And at the time I was like, whatever, I'm not doing that. And then Janet Wellum said that too. And I'm like, huh, well, maybe. And then this happened to be around when the Twilight books were huge. And I ended up reading them and I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. So when I got the idea for Flickr, I was like, well, let's just try it for young adult. Let's see how it goes. And so I wrote first person present tense for the first time and loved it. So I just was like, okay, apparently I found my calling. I really enjoy it. Yeah.
I have a YA on the docket. And so give me some advice. What are like two or three pieces of advice for writing teen pro tags?
Let's see. Well, don't rely too heavily on slang because it's going to be outdated by the time you finish writing it. Give them more credit than you think in terms of what they're talking about, what they're concerned about, what they're thinking about. You know, they're practically adults and they definitely, I think, know a lot more than we did when we were kids. And remember that the biggest thing is that, you know, the issues they're dealing with, well, we may look at that and be like, you know, why are they getting so worked up about this? Like, you know, you'll find another boyfriend, or history 101 isn't the worst thing in the, like, whatever, but that's their world to them. Like, these are life and death things for them. And cause that's all they know. And, you know, they can be irrational and rational at the same time and go from being super immature and silly to, you know, having real life concerns, you know, in the next breath, and just giving them that respect for it. The thing, what I like about young adult is, you know, regardless of what the topic is or whatever, but there's always some semblance of hope at the end of it. And it doesn't mean like it's a happily ever after, or, oh, your mom won't die from cancer. Or, I mean, she could still die, but like, you'll still have some kind of like hopeful thing at the end that says like, you'll get through this, and it may not be that great, but like, you're going to get through it. And that's what I like about it, you know?
So, oh my God, write fully fleshed, fully emotional characters that just happen
right.
to be younger.
Amazing, right?
Oh, that's just no, that's too hard. That can't be it. There's got to be some other magic. Okay, well, we're getting towards the end here a little bit, but no discussion with you is going to be complete without Super Owen.
I know, and he just started barking, so it was perfect timing.
Tell everybody just real quick who Super Owen is and where they can find his appearances.
Owen is my very, very smart and personality-filled miniature schnauzer. I got him when I lived in Mexico. He's almost 9, and he has an Instagram called Super Owen the Schnauzer. He's hilarious. He's my baby. Like, I, you know, he's my longest relationship. And he's just a sweetheart.
Was that you, Jeremy? I heard laughing.
No, he's in the other room, but he knows. I tell him. but you know, I had 2 schnauzers growing up, and one was really, really smart, but not very nice. And the other one was the sweetest thing, but super dumb. And this one is both smart and nice. And yeah, he keeps us on his toes. We call him the pitiful and the precious, cause he is a baby. But yeah, he's hilarious.
Well, he is absolutely adorable. And I want to let everybody know too, that she was telling me back in the green room that she had Owen locked in the bedroom with Jeremy, her husband.
Yes.
So Mel keeps Jeremy locked in the bedroom when she doesn't need him.
Yeah.
I wanted you all to know that.
when you marry a younger man, I mean, you do what you want. So.
real quick, what is something that is surprising about you? I'm just going to hit you with a few lightning round questions here.
No problem.
What would people be surprised to know about you?
Well, one of them, I was just told that I apparently don't have an off switch, that I know I'm high energy, but I was on a work conference, and she's like, you don't stop. I'm like, yeah, I know. But no, usually that I play a lot of sports, and I can be both clumsy and very coordinated. I don't understand it.
that is completely awesome. Well, I am very interested to hear how you wrap this trilogy up. So when the new book comes out, will you come back on?
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. And so I'm going to call that the show here tonight. And everyone, remember, you can find this new series. It's going to be under Melanie Hoynga, which is Hoynga, at Virtual and Sticks and Bricks Booksellers. You can find her on Facebook. At Twitter, she's at Melanie Who, Hoo. And pretty much if you just search Melanie Who, you're gonna find her somewhere.
I don't expect people to try to spell my last name, so that's why I
did that. And probably the best source is the website, which is MelanieWho.com. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So with that, I will say good evening to you and good luck with the new book, especially the one the second one just came out like within the last couple of weeks, right?
Yep. Brand new.
Excellent. Well, good luck with that, and we will talk to you next time.
Great. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. And I'll let everyone know that this broadcast is owned and copyrighted by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, and you can find the Blue Plate Special on Facebook so you can stay up to date with the hottest authors fresh off the grill. And with that, I'll say good night, everyone.